Good morning, everyone. We had a big rainstorm here this morning, but now the sun is out. The birds are singing. It's beautiful, and it looks like it's beautiful where some of you are also. Sarah, looks like you're outside, and I see blue sky. Wonderful. So we are Zooming this from Hokkyochi Zen Practice Community in southeastern Minnesota. Here we are sitting on the traditional homelands of our indigenous brothers and sisters, the Och'etishakowin, Sauk, and Meskwake. So deep gratitude. Also deep gratitude for the Zen practitioners who've been at this place for over 40 years maintaining the Dharma. So during this session, I'm going to be teaching from the Song of Zazen, the beautiful poem by Hakuin, Zen Master Hakuin, and also teaching from Tara Brach's Radical Compassion. And every day for the noon service, we're going to be chanting the Song of Zazen. But I would like to begin my Dharma talk this morning by reading it. And if you want to read along, it's in your chant book. So for those of you who didn't register for the session and are here, if you want a copy of the chants, you can email Myoshin and she can send that out to you. Not right immediately, but soon. So I'm just going to read it. Song of Zazen. All beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is water. There is no ice apart from water. There are no Buddhas apart from beings. Not knowing how close the truth is to them, beings seek for it from afar. What a pity. Like someone in the midst of water, crying out in thirst. Like a child of a wealthy home, wandering among the poor. Lost on dark paths of ignorance, we wander through the six worlds. From dark path to dark path, how can we ever be free from birth and death? Oh, the Zazen of the Mahayana, to this the highest praise. Devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas, all have their source in Zazen. The merit of even a single sitting in Zazen erases the countless sins accumulated in the past. Where are all the dark paths then? The pure land itself is near. Those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings without end. Much more, if you turn yourself about and confirm your own self nature, that self nature is no nature, you shall go far beyond self-deceptive arguments. The gate of oneness of cause and effect is opened. The path of non-duality and non-trinity runs straight ahead. Your form being the form of no form, your going and returning takes place nowhere but where you are. Your thought being the thought of no thought, your singing and dancing is none other than the voice of the Dharma. How boundless and free is the sky of Samadhi. How refreshingly bright the full moon of wisdom. At this moment, what is there that you lack? Nirvana is right here before our eyes. Where you stand is the land of purity. Your person the body of the Buddha. So even if there's a lot here that you might not understand, I hope that you can get a sense of the feeling of this, which is pointing us to the not only the possibility of liberation, but the reality of liberation. It just gives me chills, the way that he so beautifully expresses this. So one of the things that occurs to me in reading this and teaching from it is the question, what does it mean to be a Buddha? Because he's pointing and says, there are no Buddhas apart from beings. We're beings, and so that means we're also Buddhas. And so what does that mean? And it means, according to the Zen teachings in this poem and elsewhere, it means to be you. To be a Buddha means to be true to yourself. So in the very beginning of Tara Brach's book, she says she started asking herself some questions, and then started asking those questions of her students as well. And the question was, what does it mean to be true to yourself? And then, do you feel that your life is aligned with what matters most to your heart? And are you living true to yourself today? What about right now? So often when I hear a question like, or ask myself a question like, is my life aligned with what matters to my heart? Right away I start thinking. So I start thinking about all the things I'm doing in my life, and you know, so I may make a list, like, how is my work, how is my household, how are my extracurricular activities, what are my hobbies, what are the books that I'm reading. So I might like start doing something like that, and there's nothing wrong with doing something like that, but I think if we really want to answer that question from a practice place, the important word in the question is feel. Do you feel that your life is aligned with what matters to your heart? So what we need to do to answer that question is start paying attention to our bodies. So not so much the story of what we're doing, although that's important, not to ignore that, but to really drop into, what am I feeling now in my body, right now? And for me, Zazen really is a path to this practice. It is a path to this practice of living true. But when we do Zazen, I think a lot of times we get it wrong. And we get it wrong by trying to get rid of thoughts, is one way that we might sort of get it wrong. Maybe that's not the right phrase. Perhaps I'll say instead, often when we practice Zazen, we're not engaging it in the most helpful way. So trying to get rid of thoughts is actually not a very helpful way. Even though I just said, not so much thinking, feel in the body, but the thinking is there too, and the thoughts actually relate to what we're feeling in our body. So it's not getting rid of them. If we focus on getting rid of them, that's going to cause a lot of suffering. The other thing that happens sometimes in Zazen is that we try to have big insights. So again, wonderful to have big insights. When that happens, you know, they're helpful to us. But if we're sitting Zazen trying to have big insights, or even little insights, then we're not really paying attention to, how are we feeling in our life right now? Are we living true to our life right now? or how can we just be ourselves in this moment? So what I'm finding in studying Tara Brach's RAIN, that's really a way to engage our bodies and hearts and minds. So RAIN, again, is recognize. That's recognizing what's going on. Allow, which is allowing it to be there, or even maybe better than allowing it to be there is allowing myself to be a person who's having such a pattern that I'm recognizing. And usually I'm recognizing the pattern that's unhelpful. I could recognize a pattern that's helpful too. But usually it's the patterns that are unhelpful that we want to then immediately try to get rid of and not see. So it's like allowing it to be there, allowing me to be a person like that in this moment. And then with that allowing, then the next step is investigate. And as I said last night, investigate is a little bit tricky of a word because it makes me think about a headspace, like, you know, thinking about it. And it's not so much that as it is really look deeply at how this thing that's happening that we've noticed, that we've recognized and now we're allowing, how it's manifesting in our body. What's happening in our body when we are recognizing and allowing that pattern? And then the next step is nurture. And the nurture is like, okay, so then we might recognize something. I'm going to be talking a lot more about this too. I'm just giving you an overview now. We recognize something, we allow it to be there, or allow ourselves to be such a person, feel what is going on in our body and investigate that, seeing how it's changing. And then we can ask ourselves, what do I need? What do I need right now? What do I need in my life? And it coming from that place in the body that's hurting, the place in the body that's feeling uncomfortable, and then what do I need? So like just as an example of what might happen with that, when I used this process recently, one of the things that I was feeling was a familiar pattern and then allowing it to be there and then investigating what it felt like. And it felt like, you know, sort of sharp pain in my heart. And it's like, okay, that's familiar too. I'm used to that. But I was engaging it in a different kind of way with this allowing and then just really investigating and then asking the question, what do I need? Which I hadn't really asked before starting to study Tara Brach. And when I asked the question, it was like, I was also noticing that it was moving down when I started. It was moving down from my heart. It wasn't just staying there. It was sort of expanding and moving down. And so then it was like, oh, I need this to go all the way to the center of the earth. Like I need some kind of really strong grounding connection. That's what I feel like my body needs. And so that was very healing. And it allowed me to be present with all the difficult things that were swirling. And it felt really good. And then Tara adds this final step after, called after the RAIN, where instead of just, okay, now I solved that problem, I'm now on to the next thing. It's like, just let yourself be with that good feeling. Like it felt really good to say, oh, I need to feel connected to the center of the earth. And now I sort of am somehow. And so let me just like hang out here for a few minutes at least and sort of so I can plant that seed in my consciousness of this is a way of being that's not lost in my swirling patterns, but that's really connected. So that's just an example of how that can work. And like I said, we'll be working with this a lot more in the coming week. As I was studying both the Song of Zazen and Tara Brach's book, I just was amazed at how many things synced up. So what I'd like to do is mostly kind of go through the Song of Zazen a line or two at a time, and then talk a little bit about Tara Brach's teachings and how they relate. So I'll just start from the beginning, and I'm going to need a coffee.
Oh, absolutely.
So the first line, all beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is water. There is no ice apart from water. There are no Buddhas apart from beings. So usually we have a story about who we are. And for most of us, that story is not, I am Buddha, right? Some people might have that story. Well, that's a story too. But most of us have a different kind of story. But whatever story we have, it's not the true story. So I want to share a little something from Tara Brach about this. So she says, any story you have about yourself is not the same as the unfolding reality of what you are. The ongoing life of your senses, the tenderness of your heart, the consciousness that right now is hearing these words. Yet, because our beliefs are continuously filtering and interpreting reality, we mistake our stories about ourselves and the world for reality itself. So she has this wonderful phrase that she got from one of her teachers called real but not true. Something can be real, like we're experiencing it as real, but it's not true. And let me share a story that she tells about that and how that manifests with someone she was working with. So this person is Janice, who's a single mom, a friend of Tara's, who started coming to her weekly meditation class. And she had a very demanding job and also felt very caught between the needs of her 15-year-old son, who was struggling with social anxiety, and also of her father, who I think was in assisted living and who basically lived for her visits. So twice a week, she'd leave work early and spend 45 minutes navigating the evening rush hour to get to her dad's assisted living facility. And he always lit up when she arrived. But then when she got up to leave, he'd anxiously ask when she was coming back. And so she resented him for making her feel guilty and resented the time away from work and her son. And mostly, she deeply resented herself for not being more open-hearted and gracious. So this is a person, this friend of Tara's had begun to practice RAIN, but so far this tangle of resentment that she was feeling hadn't budged. So during one of their walks, Tara and Janice, Janice asked for Tara's help. So Tara says, I put on my meditation teacher hat. So I took off my friend hat for a moment, put on my meditation teacher hat, and asked her what she was believing about herself. And she responded immediately, I'm falling short on the most important fronts. So how often have we felt that? I'm falling short.
Always.
Yeah. And then shaking her head with resignation, she went on, you know, Tara, I'm failing them. And this is awful to say, but I'm just not a loving person. So Tara, and this is really wonderful, she says, okay, so usually when we hear a painful self-judgment from a friend, we want to right away say, of course you're a loving person. What do you mean? Remember the time? Blah, blah, blah. But anyway, Tara didn't say that. Instead, she asked her a question, which was, is it true? Is it true that you're failing and that you're not a loving person? And Janice responded immediately, all evidence points that way. So Tara asked her again, are you certain that you're failing, that you're not a loving enough person? Is it really true? So this time, Janice paused and took in the question, and then she said, okay, it really feels true. I'm not liking myself very much these days. But no, I guess I'm not certain that it's true. So that's the real but not true. It's real how she was feeling, but perhaps not true. So Tara goes on to say, our beliefs and our feelings that are under them are real. They exist in our body and mind and have tremendous power over us. But we need to ask ourselves this. Do they match the actual living, changing stuff of our experience in the world? In other words, are they true? So I think that's really helpful information for us. And I'm just going to pause here and say for a minute, how can we work with this kind of stuff in our practice? So for most of us, if we're doing a traditional Zazen in the Mahayana tradition, it's often, we're not kind of doing a guided meditation. We're not bringing up, like, what are my patterns? We're not asking ourselves the question, am I true to myself right now? We're just sitting and breathing and being with our body, right? But what I've found is that I'm sitting and breathing, being with my body, and then these patterns come up, or these thoughts come up, or these difficulties come up. And then what do I do? So sometimes the instruction is you drop the storyline, so don't get lost in the story about that, and just enter into the felt sense of the body. You're just being with your body. But what I find is because those stories and those beliefs are so compelling, they don't want to let go. And they completely can hijack us. Of course, we're never really hijacked. We're never really anywhere else but right here. But what I mean is that they can really take us away from being conscious of the reality that Hakuin is talking about in this poem, like how refreshingly bright the full moon of wisdom. So when we're so-called hijacked by our difficult beliefs and thoughts and stories, we're not really feeling like there's a full moon of wisdom. So what I find is that using this process of RAIN, of, you know, intentionally, when I notice something, start to recognize, oh, that there is a pattern. And then allow. And then feel in my body. So then that third step of investigating is Zazen in a way. It's like I'm just being with my body. But I've had the chance to have a little bit of a process that helps me actually be present. It sort of helps me acknowledge the realness of those stories. And then I can be present. And then the next question of what do I need? The nurturing also kind of helps me continue to be present into the future. So that's the way I'm working with this in Zazen. And Anne, did you have a question?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
This relates directly to what you're talking about, kind of about the cognition of an understanding of the stories that are derailing you. And the meditation of just sitting in this without necessarily languaging what this is. And so that's where my question is, because it seems like my meditations are a lot more gray. Like I might be feeling something that if I was to cognate, and it would be about safety or something, but that would be, that So what's recognition? Because when I recognize a physical something, it's often very gray as to what it is. It's just like a sort of a whole body scan read of this, and it doesn't have a word to it. So does recognize mean I have to flip it to language and know what it is? I get all mixed up with that.
Yeah, thank you for that question. So no, I would say you don't need to go to a language. If you're able to just be present with recognizing something in your body that's happening, or it seems gray, or it's not, doesn't have words, that's fine. This is more like sometimes, you know, a story immediately comes up for people. Sometimes a belief immediately comes up, and then it's hard to let go of it, you know, to just say, okay, let it go. Letting it go can be like trying to push it away and get rid of it, which isn't practice. So this is, you know, when you have a situation arise where this, you are noticing, you know, for a lot of people, like, to, it's okay to temporarily go to the language of the story, of the belief, of the whatever pattern that you're seeing, and then allow it, and then investigate, and then nurture. But if you don't, if there isn't language around it, and you're just recognizing, oh, there's something, and it doesn't feel quite right, then you, it doesn't have to have words. You can still use the process, because you can say, could I allow this to be here? Could I allow myself to be a person feeling this? And then you could say, can I further investigate? How is it manifesting in my body? And then you could ask yourself the question, what do I need? Or sometimes if it's that beyond words, what you're experiencing, you might not need a word of what you need. I mean, something might come up of just, you know, there's a need fulfilled without words. So that can happen too. So I want to take the next line here. Not knowing how close the truth is, beings seek for it afar. What a pity. Like someone in the midst of water crying out in thirst. Like a child of a wealthy home wandering among the poor. So not knowing how close the truth is, beings seek for it from afar. So that's like, when a thought or a story comes up, I think I have to get rid of it. Rather than, oh, I can just recognize this is happening. And perhaps I can recognize it. Perhaps I can ask myself, could I allow this to be here? Could I allow myself to be such a person? But usually usually what happens is, especially with really painful things, there's a recognition, perhaps, and then right away, oh, I don't want to see that. So right away, we want to turn away because it's difficult. Or I don't want that to be there. I don't want to be such a person. So it says, it's when we're doing that, it's like the water, the nurturing that we need is right there, but we're still crying out in thirst. Or this line, like a child of a wealthy home wandering among the poor. So this is a reference from a story in the Lotus Sutra. Some of you might be familiar with the story. And it's really kind of a similar story to the prodigal son story in the Christian tradition, but with a little different twist. So I'll just briefly, for those who don't know or don't remember the story, there's a father who has a lot of wealth, and he has a son who basically wants his inheritance early. He wants to just take the money and run, and the father says, okay. So in this story, there's not two sons, there's just one. And so he goes off, and then he just, you know, basically spends his inheritance, you know, on wine, women, and song, whatever. So he loses all of his money, and he's wandered now far, far from home, and he's destitute. So he's just going around, you know, either begging or whatever menial jobs that he can get, just really struggling and going from town to town. Because sometimes, you know, he's like dirty and, you know, whatever, needy. So some towns are like, just get out of here, you know, so he's rejected. But he finds himself back in the town that his father lives in. And in the meantime, his father has actually accumulated more wealth, and he actually doesn't recognize that he's in his hometown and that that's his father. So he sees this kind of, you know, princely person, you know, from afar with, you know, on the lion seat with gold and, you know, whatever, all these, you know, things are around the trappings of great wealth and power. And he thinks, oh, that's, you know, too much for me. I can't even be in this town at all. I gotta get out of here. That's like, you know, I don't belong here, certainly. But at the same time, as he saw this man who was his father who didn't recognize, the father saw him and did recognize him and told some of his assistants, go and, you know, go get that person and bring him back. So they did, they like physically, you know, and he's like, no, I didn't do anything wrong. What are you doing? And so then the king said, okay, you can let him go. So then he was relieved and he went to the town next door. And, but then the king secretly sent, some people to go and find him, but he had them instead dressed like really shabby clothes and, you know, just like, okay, they're not wealthy. And, you know, and then just say, okay, we have a job for you shoveling manure, you know, and we'll pay you twice what you're making now shoveling manure. So if you come, you know, so then he was like on the suburbs of this town, really on the outskirts, shoveling manure. And so the story is like years and years go by and slowly, slowly he's like promoted, you know, the slowly, you know, the father at first doesn't even like personally connect with him. He's just like sending his attendants. But then he does finally start personally connecting with him. The son still doesn't remember, but at a certain point he says, you're my son. You know, he says, I'm like a father to you. And he says, I am your father. And so, I mean, there's, to me, it's like there's an overlay of capitalism, which is kind of like icky in the story. But we just take it as a metaphor. It's a really strong metaphor. Like there's this liberation, we could say, that's available. And we're like too afraid of it or think that it's not, we, that's not our inheritance. We better run away somewhere else. And if the Buddha himself were just to come to us, we might say, whoa, that's like too much. So we can't actually see that it's right there. And we might need to do something like recognize, allow, investigate, nurture in order to slowly, slowly like allow ourselves to actually realize our inheritance. So I want to say a little something of from Tara Brach again. And it's about the, about forgetting. So like I said, that, so usually what we do is we want to run away so that we might start to recognize something, but then it's too much. Either it's too bad, like what we're seeing in ourselves is just too difficult. We don't want to see that in ourselves, so we turn away. Or it's too good, and I don't deserve that. I can't actually receive that. And she says this forgetting is, she calls it being in a trance. That's a partially unconscious state, like a dream, is disconnected from the whole of reality. When we're in a trance, our minds are narrowed, fixated, and usually immersed in thought. Our hearts are often defended, anxious, or numb. Once you recognize the signs of trance, you'll begin to see it everywhere in yourself and others. When you're in trance, or you are in trance when you're living on autopilot, when you feel walled off and separate from those around you, when you are caught up in feeling fearful, angry, victimized, or deficient. And she says, the good news is we all have the capacity to free ourselves. So that's that we're already Buddha. She says, when we're lost in the forest, we can create a clearing simply by pausing and turning from our clamoring thoughts to become aware of the moment-to-moment experience or presence. So presence is this wakeful and immediate awareness. It's also referred to as consciousness, spirit, Buddha nature, true nature, the awakened heart mind, with many other names. When we've reconnected fully to presence, and she says reconnected here, because often we remember, oh yeah, when that happens, it's like, oh yeah, I know this feeling. For most of us, I think we have an inkling of familiarity from somewhere, maybe even from the womb. When we've reconnected fully to presence, we can open to what is going on inside us, the changing flow of sensations, feelings, and thoughts without any resistance. This allows us to live our life moments with clarity and compassion. The shift from being lost in unconscious mental and emotional reactivity to inhabiting our full presence is an awakening from trance. So that's how we wake up, or that's when we wake up from trance. But she also gives us a little more, some red flags for how we can recognize that we're in a trance state. So here's some of the things she says. I realize I've just gone through a whole bag of trail mix. Everybody's the bad guy today. My kids, my boss, my partner. I'm finding fault with the world. I catch myself sizing up other men to see who's the most dominant. Even the small stuff feels like just too much. I'm listening to someone and I'm planning something else, like how to get outside for a cigarette or what I'm going to have for lunch. I lose an hour following links online. That didn't happen in the Buddha's time, but it happens now. My neck starts hurting and I realize my shoulders are up and knotted and that I've been anxious for hours. I notice the inner voice, in parentheses, my mother's, saying, can't you do anything right? I'm walking through a store and suddenly realize I'm comparing my body with every other woman's I see. I'm rushing around trying to get things done and I hurt myself or break something or make a stupid mistake. So recognizing our flags, whatever they are, whether they're these things or other things, recognizing our flags that we're in a trance helps us step out of the trance. So it's important to say, these flags are to help us, not if we notice, then it's like there might be an impulse to turn around and start beating ourselves up, like, oh, I'm in trance again, I'm so bad. That's not going to be helpful. It's like, oh, good thing I noticed. Now I've recognized it. Can I allow it? Can I allow myself to be such a person? Can I investigate what's going on? Can I ask myself what I need? Hakuin says, lost on the dark path of ignorance, we wander through the six worlds, from dark path to dark path. How can we ever be free from birth and death? So the wandering from dark path to dark path is like recognizing, but not allowing. Keep recognizing, but then we keep not allowing, so then we just go into trance again. Now we're in a different trance that says I'm no good, or I have to not think about this. hear some more advice from Tara. So often when that recognition happens and we're at the pivot point where we could allow, but we often turn away, she says, our mind says no. That's the turning away part. Our mind says no by immediately assuming something is wrong, finding something or someone to blame, and trying to eliminate the problem. Our body says no by tensing or numbing. Our heart says no by becoming defensive or closing down. Meanwhile, our behaviors say no when we lash out or withdraw or become preoccupied. So she often asks her students to reflect on a difficult situation and then encourages them to watch the many different ways their body and mind resist the raw emotions going on inside them. So you see, even if you were feeling like, okay, but I can't do this because, you know, I resist, then you can notice the resistance. So yay, you can still practice. And she reports, and I find this to be true as well, that they see, often with sadness, how their efforts to protect themselves, so that resisting, actually adds more pain. So she has this story. One man who had been bullied as a child now had a critical supervisor who threatened him regularly with poor reports. As he replayed a recent confrontation, he could feel his stomach clenching in fear and his heart pounding. Instead of taking time afterwards to open to his own experience, so the saying yes, the allowing, he'd go right into blaming himself for feeling intimidated and mentally rage against his supervisor. Then he'd plunge back into activity, moving paperwork along faster while making even more errors and communicating less clearly. So his no, his resistance, perpetrated a familiar sense of himself as deficient and victimized. So we can notice whatever form our no takes, whatever form that resistance takes, it's a way of tensing against reality and trying to avoid the raw pain of emotional suffering. But the no can also be a flag that tells us we're in trance and that we need to deepen our attention. And the more quickly we become aware of that no, that resistance, the better we can respond. So it's the difference between a habitual no, the habitual resistance, and actually bringing awareness and presence to the resistance. So in a way, that bringing the awareness and presence to the resistance, to our own resistance, is a yes. Like we're saying, yes then, yes, this is what's happening with me right now. These difficult things happen. They manifested in my body and mind. I'm wanting to resist them. Okay. Oh, I can feel that. What is that? So again, with what is that, we can ask, what is happening inside me? And can I be witness with this? Can I just be with this? Or can I just let this be? Or as I like to say, can I be such a person? This is who I am, and this is Buddha, right here, right now. But then we have a story that says, no, I'll be Buddha when I like really get this really well. And like, okay, I'm moving along, recognizing, allow, investigate, nurture. Okay, I got it. No, we're already Buddha. So we can just right in the middle of that, however it's manifesting, we can be present. That is possible. And then if we notice I'm not present, oh, okay, noticing not present, that's Buddha too. That's like really kind of beyond how we want to. Often we want there to be like a clear thing, like I'm going to, you know, follow these steps and then I'm going to be Buddha, and Buddha is good and the other thing that I was before is bad. And that's not what Hakuin is saying. It's not what all the Zen teachers are saying. It's not what Tara Brach is saying. So my hope is that during this week, we can start to really open to that truth. I think that one of the meditations, maybe tonight or this afternoon, depending on how many people are signed up for Doksan, I might do a guided meditation with the rain, using the rain. So that will be a little different than just Zazen. So anyway, sometime in the next few days, I will try to do that because I think it could be helpful to actually have the chance. So then you'll get to, it'll be different than Zazen, pure Zazen, because you'll be bringing to mind maybe a difficult experience and then working with that through the steps, and I'll be guiding that. And the thing that's great about Zoom is if anyone feels like I'm not ready to do that, like something's coming up for me, it's too difficult, it's like super easy to just press the, turn off your speaker, and then you can just sit silently with us. So that is fine too, because that is also Buddha. So with that, I'm going to close. Oh, someone had a message. Let's see, I hope it's not, I can't hear you. Okay, I'm gonna read this. Is there an idea of deserving an inheritance? Must be a bodhisattva for liberation or just by doing zazen? I think we all deserve, it's not that we even deserve an inheritance, it's that we already have it. So, and there's no like that you must be a bodhisattva. It's like if you start engaging this practice, then you want to be one. Because you see that that is the path to happiness. So that's kind of how I see it. And Sarah, did you have a question? No? Okay. Okay, so I think we'll close. Thank you so much.